Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, so a success in London. You'd have to say overall, yep. Blimey, it was a great success. Smashing it. Smashing success in London at Wembley. 35-7 win for the Pats over the Tampa Bay Bucks. We welcome you inside this bi-week edition of Patriots Playbook. I'm John Rook. PFW's Eric Scalabino is here for the opening hour of the program today. Big show today, Eric. Big, big show.
Yeah, what do we got?
In addition to the fact that, of course, that your presence is here with us today. Charlie Casserly from CBS Sports, former NFL exec. He's going to join us here in approximately 10 minutes. And then Mike Reese from ESPN Boston.
Our good friend.
Yeah, our good
spent
friend.
Spent some time with us in London.
Really?
Yeah,
you tell any good Mike Reese stories that I can ask him about?
Ask him about his trip to Wembley Stadium because it nearly cost him his life.
No.
I'm not kidding.
Serious.
Yeah. He blogged about it, had photos. There was an incident. So
I must
ask
have missed
him about that.
I must have missed that entry because I tried to keep up with it as much as I could over the weekend. I missed that one. All right. So we'll talk about that as well coming up. Just a quick little program reminder because this is the bye week. There will be a program tomorrow, but I have to travel for college football duties. So Christopher Price from WEEI.com. I've got West Virginia, South Florida on Friday night in Tampa. So I'll be back down in Tampa.
Oh, poor thing.
Yeah, I know. Tough. It's 90 degrees there.
You love it down there, don't you?
I do like it in Tampa quite a bit. Not as much as I would have liked going to London with these guys, but, you know, Tampa is pretty good. Chris Price.
You're lying your ass off.
No, not about London, not about Tampa and not about London either. That's a genuine like for both areas. For obviously vastly different reasons. We're going to bring those up again.
I guess
can't
get enough of those.
We have to use them all now.
Can't get enough of them.
We may not get back over there for some time, right?
That's okay.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Chris Price from WEEI.com will be here tomorrow, and so will Peter King and Russell Baxter tomorrow's program. So same, there you go. Who said we weren't working on a bye week? We're working on a bye week here.
So I thought I'd work my mojo.
All right. Jason's going to play with his toys for a while, and we'll just let him.
What's your point?
Yeah, no point at all, none whatsoever. The trip,
yes.
Overall, give us your quick synopsis for those that might be tuning in to hear the program. And it was obviously a better than average for a typical NFL road trip.
It felt like a Super Bowl road trip condensed into three and a half, four days. It was everything was top notch from beginning to end.
Where did you guys stay, by the way?
We stayed at the very, very posh Grosvenor House on Park Lane, right next to Hyde Park.
Nice.
Yeah, very right down the road from the Marble Arch. That's a, that's a pretty famous landmark that people might recognize. It's right at the, that was at the end of our street. That was at one end, Buckingham Palace down at the other end.
Yeah, very nice.
Phenomenal facility. I mean, the front of it looks like a tiny little entryway, and then inside it just expands. It's a humongous maze of rooms. And
was the team also there?
All of us. Yeah, yeah, the whole party of Patriots entourage was there.
Awesome.
Excellent facilities. Our flight over was wonderful. About 5.5 hour flight.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
We flew Virgin Atlantic on a charter, and that was just excellent service all around.
Nice.
Facilities were great. Friday was a whirlwind of a day because we got in at about 5:30 a.m. GMT. And so,
for those of you that don't know, Greenwich Mean Time.
Yeah.
Okay.
The official time of the world.
The official time.
So by the time we got to our hotel, we actually got to our hotel about an hour, 25 minutes ahead of schedule, which was excellent because we got to get a little shut-eye before we had to start our actual work day. So Andy and Paul went to practice that day at the Brit Oval, very famous facility and
cricket.
Historic cricket facility. And they play other sports there too, but mostly cricket, I guess. I went on the official promotional tour for the team with John Smith, some of the cheerleaders, a few other people. And we went on a little mini tour of the city.
So you got actually a chance to see some things.
Did, very much awesome. So, yeah. Great experience. Went on the London Eye that afternoon.
Oh, isn't
well.
That great?
Yeah,
that's
really
a blast.
Is.
Love
sure
the
is.
London Eye. That's very cool.
Yep. Went to Trafalgar Square, did, mm-hmm. did all the major things.
So you did the touristy stuff.
We
good.
Did.
Good.
Friday night went to the Audley, which is a great traditional English pub. Went with some of the guys from Public Relations.
Nice.
Andy and Paul, we had split up because of the way the day had broken up, and they went and did some walking about the city and had a good time doing that. Saturday, we went over to Surrey, England, right on the outskirts of London, about 40, 45 minutes from central London.
Mm-hmm.
Watched the UK Patriots in their flag football game against the Tampa Bay fan club.
Nice. Who won?
Tampa scored four touchdowns to our one.
Wow!
Which was a bit of a surprise, seeing how we were... we outnumbered them.
Gosh!
And
what happened?
Out-youthed them? Yes, we were much younger than
so
they
were. So
the
older guys won?
The older, fatter guys won. They had a couple of guys who we think might have been ringers,
oh.
and it was pretty obvious who those guys were, but nonetheless...
Call them out!
It was a fun time. It was out on a place called Richmond Park,
mm-hmm.
which was... There was like a grouping of parks. Rosslyn Park was one of them. Richmond Park, where we were... We're told that they were once owned by Henry VIII. It was like his, I guess, his leisure grounds, or he had an estate out there, and mm-hmm. it could tell a very beautiful, typical, what you would think of as quintessential British countryside is kind of what it looked like. It was very beautiful. And then that night, we had the UK Patriots fan club party at the Sports Cafe on Haymarket, which was another great time. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many fans were there. I mean, they were talking up 500 to 600, and there were at least that many there throughout
great.
The whole night. It
sounds
was
like a great
jam-packed.
Crowd.
Packed. Yeah, great
nice.
Crowd. Sunday was the game, but we didn't have to leave till 20 past 1 in the afternoon, so we had the morning. Andy and Paul and I got up early, went on a bus tour for 2 hours, and got to see even more of the sights.
So that's when you did the double-decker thing?
That's when we did the double-decker.
Yeah, I liked that. That was actually good. We enjoyed that,
yeah.
too. Yeah.
And then got back, had a little late breakfast, and then went over to Wembley. Had a great game. The phenomenal facility that Wembley is. It's a top-five NFL stadium by far. One of the best stadiums we've ever seen.
Very nice.
And people there were excellent. Very, very gracious hosts. Don't really have any complaints about anything. The trip back was without incident.
How's the jet lag?
I'm pretty much over it, I think. I hit the wall yesterday, actually. The first day we got back, I was fine. I went to bed the same time. But
yeah, it usually takes about 24 hours.
Yesterday, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I laid down for what I thought was going to be like an hour nap. I woke up 6 hours later, and I was up till midnight.
Don't you like that? You gotta love that.
But I think I'm... sort of back
you're
to normal
back now.
But
unbelievable.
Loved the trip. Can't say enough good things about the people, the food, the facilities. Everything was top-notch. And the Pats had a 35-7 win. So
let me ask you this then, just to kind of cut to the chase. Do you foresee any expansion? And by that I mean either number of games played over there in a single year, the potential for a franchise over there. Where do you think is a realistic what is a realistic measure for success with NFL football in places like London?
I think there's definitely room for expansion. I think they should not bite off more than they
can
chew.
And do we lose our UK Pats fans when that does happen?
No, I don't think we lose them. We might actually gain in some areas.
Okay.
But I think there's definitely room for more.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that the NFL should bite off more than it can chew at the moment. And I don't think we should force feed the fans over there when they might not be ready for it. Putting an actual NFL franchise there full time, I think it might be a little too soon to jump into that. However, I think I'd be very much in favor of adding the number of games that are played there, regular season games that are played there per year. Anywhere from 2 to 4 more.
Really? That many?
I think they could support that. Obviously, there'd have to be some logistics to work out with the soccer games that are played there and all the other things. But I think there's an appetite for more than just one NFL game per year. But on top of that, John, I think what the league needs to promote more, now that, I mean, let's face it, since 1982, the United Kingdom has been exposed to NFL football.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a whole generation that's seen and followed NFL football in some form. Not everybody does it, obviously, over there, but they've had that experience for at least 25 years or so. it's time now to start getting the youth of that country to be able to learn the game by playing it. And I think they need to. The NFL needs to invest not only putting its signature games over there, but in fostering youth leagues, flag football leagues, even youth tackle leagues, high school level club leagues. People need to play the game in order to appreciate it at the next level, which, in my mind, will then foster. You know, it's going to take a long time. It's not going to be an easy, quick process. But I think we saw the same thing in soccer, where in the 60s and early 70s, you had the North American Soccer League here.
Right.
And a lot of the European stars, Beckenbauer, Canalia, Pelé from Brazil, they all came and played in that league. And I think that sort of helped foster the youth leagues that I grew up playing in throughout the 80s and even the early 90s, which then people, you know, soccer mom became a term in this country. With 25 years ago, you never would have heard people talking about soccer moms.
This is true.
But it's proliferated to such an extent that now the young kids who played that are now playing in MLS, are playing in the American World Cup teams. They're playing overseas, some of them, in the Premier Leagues or in Europe and elsewhere. I think what the NFL needs to do, aside from just playing our games over there, is start getting the people there to play the game themselves.
Gotcha. Yeah, then that would,
and then that will over, you know, over time it will develop the way. And you have to have patience with it, but I think that's the way to go. And I can see not just London, but like put games in Berlin, a country like Germany where
well,
we know the
so.
Game is popular.
Right,
France, Italy,
Spain,
anywhere
Spain.
Else.
Barcelona
Spain, sure.
had a viable franchise over there for a while,
and other countries right. that have never had it. You know, right. Russia. South Africa, other countries that maybe haven't had the exposure to American football that some of the European countries have.
Okay.
Put that out there. Start with the same model that you did with London. Play a couple of games there, but then while you're there, promote the development of younger leagues and ways for people to take part in the game. And fantasy football, sure, is a way for people to learn about the game and the
right.
players in that way.
Absolutely.
So, you know, got to be patient with it, but I think to answer your question, for London and for, you know, Western Europe especially, there's definitely room for expansion. I think adding more games is the way to go at this point.
All right, well, let's start now to kind of turn our attention away from that, although we're going to include some of that in the conversation here, but also to take stock of where the Patriots are through 7 weeks of the NFL as we're into the bye week. And joining us on the program here inside the playbook is Charlie Casserly, former NFL executive, now with CBS Sports. Charlie, it's John and Eric here in Foxborough. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, great to be with you, John and Eric in Foxborough.
Hey, we just were obviously kind of wrapping up the trip this past weekend. What do you see as a reasonable future for the NFL's future, say, in places like London or other stops? Is it viable, do you think?
You know, probably, I caught the end of what you were saying there. No, I'm probably the naysayer in this here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bunch of one-game wonders.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there obviously clearly is interest in the one game, and if there's a second game, I think there'd be a tremendous interest over there. I've talked to people in London, and they're excited about it. So I think that's true. I think what the evolution of this is, as I see it, was that we started playing preseason games over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, they wouldn't sell because the fans had enough knowledge of who was playing and who wasn't that they weren't seeing the top players.
Right.
So that's why we took the games out of there. Then they went in 1989, I believe it was the first year of the World Football League, and
right.
it was NFL Europe. And
right.
They had different names for it. And they tried to, and you hit the thing right on the head. You know, this is not their culture. Their culture is soccer, okay, cricket, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly soccer and to a degree basketball at different spots in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to start a youth program. Well, the NFL has been working on this now off and on for 20 years. And the problem you have is whereas soccer, you need a ball, okay? And
yep.
then you need a couple of posts, you can call it a goal. Basketball, you need a ball and you got a net and boom, you can go play. Football is not that simple. To get to the level that we want, tackle football, that's very expensive. And, yes, you can start with flag, but eventually you have to come to tackle. And whereas in our country it is, you know, an accepted sport at all levels and has been for, you know, well over 100 years, you don't have that there. And I think to start it, it's very expensive. And I think that's the thing that will limit it in the long run. So I'm not so sure that we aren't in a bunch of one-game events here as opposed to changing the culture.
Why then do you think, Charlie, again, just, you know, this is just a pure opinion here, but why then do you think the NFL seems bound and determined to global expansion? Is it just simply to go out and reach for the almighty dollar, or do they really see an opportunity here to spread their product around, and that's their way to, you know, achieve more wealth for everyone?
Well, spread the product around is the same thing as chasing the dollar.
Sure. Yeah, one and the same. Absolutely, I agree.
You know, in other words, the NFL is a business, okay, besides a sport,
mm-hmm.
and there's money out there to be gained because there's fans. There's fans all over the world. So this is a way to expand the game, having the games overseas, and they have been successful. It has not hurt the teams because they have the bye the week after. So, you know, that part's been good. And so I think that that's there is money out there. When we went into NFL Europe in 89, it was all about the TV money that the NFL was going to make. Well, it never materialized, okay, the way they thought. So how much is out there, I don't really know. But, again, people that study this feel it is. We may differ on the extent and what you can develop over there, though.
You were an NFL executive running teams while NFL Europe was in play. Did you like it?
I always voted for it because I thought if you sat down and you had a blank sheet of paper and you were designing the way to run a football league, you would say, you know what, we should have some quote, whether we call it a farm system or some way to have off-season tackle football, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that, to me, what it was. I think it helped develop coaches. It helped develop officials. Whether it sparked fan interest, I'm not so sure about that. Because remember, at the end of that, most of the teams are playing in Germany. London wouldn't
right.
support a team.
Right. Yeah,
so
like,
now you're playing regular season games in London, and you sell them out. So obviously there wasn't a correlation between the two. We did not send many players over there with the idea that they were going to get better. It gave us extra spots in training camp, so we used it. We felt that if we kept our players in-house in the off-season, that our off-season program was good enough, including developing quarterbacks, that we could develop our own players. I know other teams had some success with it, Denver and Kansas City being two. So I always voted for it on the sense that if it's working for them, that tells me that there is something to it. And maybe it's their coaches who value it more than the coaches I was with. Also, just the theoretical concept I talked about, I think, makes some sense.
Charlie, what about the thoughts that are out there now about possibly floating the idea of either a Super Bowl or a Pro Bowl in London?
Well, I wouldn't buy the Super Bowl. That's an American event. I don't know how you take that out of the United States, or, in effect, an NFL city, too. Because for the most part, it is in an NFL city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's money that goes back into that franchise in some way. There's some benefit for that franchise to have it there. So I wouldn't be in favor of that on it.
As far as what about a Pro Bowl?
Well, you know, I guess, of course, I don't know what the weather's going to be like over there. You know,
that's also true.
Going to be excited about that.
Right. That's also true.
I had never thought about the Pro Bowl, to be honest with you. Mike, that would be something I personally have to think about. I don't think the players would be as excited as going to Honolulu, though.
No, that's also true.
Probably not. Yeah.
By the way,
I know that they're not. But
right. And speaking of that, do you like the idea of moving the Pro Bowl to the week in between the end of the season and the Super Bowl? I mean, and the fact that it's coming off of the island for the first time, you know, in a long while. I mean, what are your thoughts on moving things around this year?
Well, I think you have to say, and I don't have an answer to my question here, but I think you have to, if you sit down, you got to say, what are we trying to accomplish with this game? If it's increased television ratings, I think this is your best chance to get it because the season is still alive. Enthusiasm is building for the Super Bowl. There's a lot of momentum at that time. It's a Sunday or a weekend, or it is a Sunday this year, a Sunday night game, without NFL football. So let's do it. So I think from that point of view, if it's a television event, that probably makes some sense. You will not get, obviously, as many quality players in it because you won't have the Super Bowl players in it, and you'll be coming 1 week off the championship game, so you'll have two other teams that may have some players that aren't ready to play in a week. So the quality of players won't be quite as good. On the other hand, there's so many good players in the league that, if you didn't know who wasn't there, you'd still say it's a pretty good group of players.
Sure. All right, gotcha. Charlie Casserly, again from CBS Sports, former NFL executive with us here inside the Playbook on our Patriots bye week. Pats at 5-2 on top of the AFC East. Sort of a general question for you here, but I think, we've sort of noticed it as a trend over the last, at least 3 or 4 weeks, that we're quickly becoming a league now of haves and have-nots. There really seems to be a disparity when we were told, at least, that this league was built on parity. What, in your estimation, is the number one or two reason why that seems to be happening this season?
Well, it's like a perfect storm. You've got a number of things probably that hit all at one time to have this many teams down in this particular year. I can never remember a year like this, and I've been in the league since 1977, or been associated with it, I should say. I think it's a combination of some teams not having a quarterback, like a Tennessee, some bad luck in some games, some injuries, because, they're 13-3. They're not a bad football team. They're not a 0-6 football team, even though that's what their record is. Detroit's been down for a while. St. Louis has been heading down for a while. And a lot of that stems from personnel decisions that didn't work out in those situations. Cleveland has kind of been a little bit of a roller coaster, but, the new coach comes in, wants to change the culture and the philosophy, so he gets rid of, some of the players that got him to 10-6 2 years ago. Okay, these things happen. I think I can understand what he's trying to do. So it's a combination of a number of factors with each franchise. Kansas City was a team that hung around in that 9-7 area for a while, kept patching it, decided to rebuild. Well, when you decide to go rebuild, this is what it looks like now. I live in Washington, and the fans say, well, we got to do this, we got to rebuild. I don't think they understand what rebuilding looks like, okay? And so sometimes when you've got some teams that are in rebuilding jobs.
Sure. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have a number of teams here at the midway point who either are undefeated or have one loss. Which one of those teams, Charlie, do you think is the best of the bunch?
Well, I'm going to stay with St. Louis. Yeah, St. Louis. I got St. Louis on my line. New Orleans, okay?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
And I guess, let's make it simple. They beat Philly and they beat the Giants.
Two good teams.
That a lot of teams would put in their top 10. And I think that means something there. Denver has won a close game with Dallas. They won a close game with New England. A close game with Cincinnati. And it's obviously a fairly close game with San Diego there. So I don't think they separated themselves as much as, say, in New Orleans has at this point. Now, Indy, you never bet. That's number one,
mm-hmm.
Even though I just put New Orleans ahead of them. But New Orleans has played a couple of teams that are better. Indy really hasn't played anybody yet. But obviously, you could envision them being easily the number one team, too, if they beat a couple of good teams down the stretch here.
I have to admit, I was very impressed at the comeback ability that New Orleans showed against Miami this last week. And I think we are realizing that, Miami's not exactly sisters of the poor, but they may not be the same team that had it all going last year. But just the fact that they're playing with such utter confidence seems to me to be a pleasant surprise. And we talked about some of the negatives in some of the teams this year, but, the fact that the Saints are one of those former have-nots, now obviously haves up at the top of the league, that certainly has to be, I think, a positive.
No question. Their offense has always been high-scoring, prolific, and this year it's gone to another level just because I think they're together for another year primarily. And Shockey's helped them.
Yeah.
Shockey's given them an inside, move-the-chains type guy they didn't have a year ago. So that's been a positive for them. And defensively, I think Sharper's been a big addition, obviously, but he's the guy who solidified that secondary. He's made a lot of big plays for him. Probably might be having a career year for big plays. And I think Greg Williams has brought an attitude, adjustment to the defense, and a multiple scheme that when they're playing with the lead all the time, they can take some more chances. So it's been a good combination for them.
Sure. All right. What is your then your present stock on the health of the Patriots and where New England sets right now? Obviously, they're in first place in the division. Tom Brady's had to shake off some rust. They had not won on the road until they went out to London this past week and beat a relatively weak Tampa team. Where do you think the Patriots' potential might be in the second half?
I think number one, they win the division. You win, you get a home playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
New England, I don't know when the last time was they lost the home playoff game here. So,
right.
I don't know if they've lost one since Belichick's been the head coach there. And so that puts them in a tremendous position if that's where they end up. And I think that you got a team here, you got a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame coach, and a number of good players around them. Home field advantage to start at least in the first game. They're going to be in it to go to this conference championship or go to the Super Bowl. I mean, we might as well go, in my opinion, and I'm sounding like somebody in the media now, we might as well go to January right now.
No, you just sound like every Patriots fan that we've ever spoken to. That's pretty much it.
That's true now, because the fans already got it where I just said it anyway. That's true.
Yeah, that's
they don't have to play the games.
No, that's true. They don't. Charlie and John, the last time New England lost a playoff game at home was New Year's Eve 1978. They lost to Houston 31-14.
So 21 years ago, Charlie.
Now, that was the Chuck Fairbanks year when he quit?
78?
That
might have been.
Yeah.
I think so. I believe it might have been.
All right, then.
Very good memory by you, by the way.
Well, there's a story to that, see, that when I got into the league, I had a chance to either go to the Patriots or the Redskins as an intern, and Fairbanks was the coach, and I ended up going to the Redskins.
Good call.
I could have been off to Colorado or out of work, one or the other.
No kidding. Just a final question for you, Charlie, and we sure appreciate the time today. Obviously, it's business as usual around here, even though at 5-2 there would be some that would say, well, maybe, that could be a little bit better, but you have to take in consideration some of the rust that Tom has had to shake off, number one. Number two, the fact that we knew – and I think the coaching staff and the powers that be knew that this team had to get younger and certainly faster on defense, and it looks like they've at least taken some major steps toward that. Outside, away from New England, though, who has really surprised you, either in a positive or a negative sense? And is there a team right now that nobody's talking about that you think has a chance maybe even to be in the Super Bowl come February?
Well, we'll do some quick things, and then I'm doing this off the top of my head, so there could be many teams.
Absolutely, sure. Understood.
Obviously, I didn't see Tennessee at 0-6. Conversely, I never saw Jacksonville at 4-4, ever.
Okay? Wow.
I thought they were going to be down with the St. Louis's and Detroit's and everybody else. That's a tremendous job they've done there. And they've only lost by Indy to 2 points. And I don't think they're going to the Super Bowl, but the team nobody talks about is the Dallas Cowboys. They've lost two games on the last play of the game, really, Denver and the Giants. And Atlanta, which was riding high, I mean, they beat them pretty good the other day.
They did, yeah, that was a surprise.
So, I think the thing with them is this. Romo can win any game and lose any game for you. If he can just get to the point, and maybe he can't, where he's consistent and efficient, okay, every week, where he just takes the plays that are there, with the way that this Miles Austin, I don't think, is a fluke now. Watching him earlier,
yeah,
I thought
player.
The guy had talent. I was wondering why he didn't play. The Cowboys have always liked this guy. They've talked about this guy since he was a rookie, having potential. Hey, maybe the potential has come here. And the defense, I'm still a little worried about their secondary, but they're playing flying to the football, aggressive up front. If Ware stays healthy, you got he's not Lawrence Taylor, because there's only one. That kind of an impact on the game.
We had so many AFC teams also whip up on NFC teams in the last week as well, and actually we were talking the last few weeks about how we thought the NFC might have a few more championship contenders. Are we still prepared to say that the AFC is the superior league, or has the gap closed?
Well, I don't think there's much of a gap now. I do think that Indy can beat anybody. Pittsburgh, you can't discount them. You can't discount New England. I think the NFC might have more depth of teams right now, but if you're in a short team tournament, AFC would be hard to beat.
Very good. Charlie Casserly, CBS Sports, former NFL exec. Charlie, thank you for the time today. We do appreciate it, and we'll be listening, we'll be watching, we'll be following along everything you got.
All right. Well, hey, great to be with you guys.
You bet. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Charlie.
Charlie Casserly again from CBS Sports joining us here inside the playbook. The one thing I've always liked about Charlie is that he has never minced words. The guy is honest up front. He's got all of his opinions are right here on his shirt sleeves, literally, where you can, you know, see what the guy is talking about.
Well, it should be, I think.
Yeah, and so that...
Don't be afraid to voice your opinion.
That is refreshing. So many guys have agendas when they get into the media. Charlie has no agenda, and yes, he's worked for several teams in the NFL. I think probably most fans would remember him, what, as a Redskins guy?
Redskins mostly, I think.
Mostly, yeah. Although he's
went with the Texans for a while.
Texans for a little while, too, when they first launched, but
I think you remember him mostly as the
Redskins guy. But you know, he hasn't been a suck up to the Redskins by any means.
Well, you know what? I think he still thinks of himself as a GM,
yeah,
not as a media guy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these guys go into it thinking of themselves as media types.
Yeah,
I still think he approaches the game the way a GM or you know an executive might
like
look at it,
like a Floyd Reese might.
Sure. So you like know? If you're we're asking him what we would ask him if he were in that office now today. And I think he's answering the way he would answer if he were in that office today. So I think that's a good approach to take.
By the way, the reason I asked him the last question is because this last week I was a little surprised. But, I mean, you had the Texans beating the Niners. Mm-hmm. You had Colts blasting the Rams, obviously.
Yep.
You had the Patriots over the Bucks. You had the Steelers over the Vikings.
Yep.
You had the Bills beating
Buffalo
the Panthers.
Yeah.
Yes. You had the Bengals slapping the Bears.
I mean, that was an embarrassment,
shocker, right?
Wow.
And let's see, was there another one? No, that was it. The only, and of course, there were two others that went the other way.
Yeah, New Orleans over Miami.
Yeah, New Orleans
Although
over Miami.
Although Miami was beating them big at halftime.
That's true. They were big at halftime. And then the other one was, Packers beat the Browns. So you had two NFC teams win.
Yeah.
But I was surprised by the outcome of at least a couple of those interconference games. It was a big interconference weekend, and Russell Baxter and I talked about this last week, and he thought this would be a good measuring stick, and I thought the AFC more than held its own.
Well, the AFC has been more than holding its own for a long time now. Well over a decade.
Well, but we had thought, though, and I think you and I even had this conversation, Eric, earlier this year, how the NFC seemed to have better teams at the top end.
It seemed
that
way.
And that there could be more what you could call championship contending or Super Bowl contending teams this year in the NFC. Because the last couple of years you've had one, maybe two. Now you have four or five teams, and if you count the Cowboys, you could even go maybe even to a sixth team in terms of depth that could actually surprise and get to the Super Bowl.
Right. Well, there's depth in that conference, but if you put them all together as one league, there's not a whole lot of depth. I think the cream of the crop is on the other side in the AFC, still, I think.
I would say there's more teams benched in the middle of the AFC than there is in the NFC.
Yeah, New England, Indianapolis, Denver, obviously, with their record right now.
And Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Houston's not...
I think those
either.
Three or four right
in
there
the
would be at the top.
Right.
And then you'd have to put
New Orleans.
And then the next level in the AFC, I think you'd have to put, probably
Cincinnati
in there, probably still San Diego in there.
Yep.
You could put Houston in there. You could legitimately put the Jets in there, and you could put Baltimore in there. And there's nine teams right there.
Right. Whereas on the NFC, obviously New Orleans is the cream of the crop there.
I would agree.
The Giants are stumbling a little bit, but I would have put them at a very close second going into this past weekend. Atlanta, I don't know what to make of anymore because I thought
Atlanta's
they were going
to
be stronger than they were. Dallas, I don't know what to make of. I thought they were going to be stronger than they were.
I'm not.
Philly,
sold,
I guess you could put in there.
I'm not sold on Green Bay yet.
I'm not either.
I'm not sold on Green Bay.
So I have a lot more questions on the
NFC
side.
You're looking about three, like I said, maybe four.
Three, maybe four, whereas you have eight or nine maybe on the other side in the AFC.
Yeah, so pretty much answered itself, didn't it?
Yeah, and the AFC wins the Pro Bowl almost every year now, it seems. So I think that kind of... They win the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl, so I think that tells you. And they win the head-to-head matchups. I think.
Although, didn't the NFC win the Pro Bowl last year?
They might have, but
I think so.
You know.
I just think that's such a wash. I don't think you can gauge the relative talent of the leagues on the Pro Bowl anyway. I mean,
not
that's just
really, but you know, you asked Charlie about that too, about the game leaving the island and leaving the post Super Bowl.
Right.
I'm not in favor of it leaving the island. I think that's a novelty that has. That has become a signature game. It's become Hawaii's game. I think there's a great. It's a great gift for
the
players.
Does anybody know offhand why it left? Was there a lease problem or something?
Well, they did have to sign a new lease, which they did. It's going back there next year.
That's what I thought.
Right. It is going back to the island next year. But right. I think they wanted to experiment this year. Since there was the lease thing, they figured, well, this is a good time, a natural time
to experiment with it. Yeah.
Let's put it in the site of the Super Bowl the week before and see how that goes.
I do like the fact, though, that it is moving to the week in between because it gives us something to actually do and talk about during that off week, the week off between the playoffs.
You know, Charlie made the point there will be fewer players in the game.
Well, it's clear.
But
it's clear because you can't put the two teams who are in there, their players won't go.
But I think an argument can be made that when the actual Pro Bowl has been played the week after the Super Bowl, you still get a large number of players who don't play because
they were just playing
or they're hurt or they don't feel like playing.
I don't think there will be any difference
at all.
So I don't think there'll be a whole lot of difference. You'll still name a player to the Pro Bowl and you'll still make a substitution for him based on that team's relative fortunes in the playoffs that they're still alive.
And you definitely
won't have
AFC and NFC Super Bowl representatives in that game.
No.
But then again, there aren't that many. That's not a whole lot of players. The players that play in the Pro Bowl who just played in the Super Bowl, maybe a half dozen at best each year, maybe that many.
Yeah,
you know they're the two best teams obviously in the league if they made it that far. But there's not always the most players from that.
You probably have 6 to 10 players between the two teams,
right?
Because you know a good year is putting 4 or 5 guys on the team.
Oh yeah.
So you probably have anywhere from 6 to 10.
Right.
That wouldn't be there because they're still playing.
Right.
And then you're probably going to have maybe another half dozen to a dozen guys who had been eliminated from the playoffs, who are probably banged up and wouldn't go.
Right.
So what you're going to do is you're going to open up the opportunity for other guys to go. I don't think that's a bad thing. What I think they should do with those roster spots, and I don't know why we're getting off on this now. But I brought it up myself. Give younger players in the league an opportunity to make a name for themselves.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You know, almost like the NBA does the rookie versus sophomore game.
Mm-hmm.
You could save these slots for maybe first and second year pros.
Yeah,
what would be wrong with that?
I don't know. I have always loved the fact that it was in Hawaii. I just think that's a really cool thing. And
it'll get back there. You'll still have your shot.
They can even do it in Hawaii the week before the Super Bowl.
And I think they should.
Because to me, it's such a anticlimactic to have a game after the Super Bowl.
I agree.
The
Super Bowl,
the season should end.
Yeah, the season should be over. I don't think there's any question about that. All right, let's get a timeout in here and let you know that, of course, we're taking your emails. It's I was going to say it's Nitpick Tuesday, but it's really not Tuesday. I realized that yesterday was Patriots Monday because of the travel stuff, but there are some nitpick issues, I think, from this past Sunday's game. So what we'll do is we'll call this Nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday. So if you have your nitpicks, Eric, I'm sure we'll share a few of his before he gets off to practice, which actually opportunity is in about 10 or 15 minutes. So we'll get to some of those. If you have your nitpicks today, the other question I have for you today, we're taking midseason stock of the Patriots. So I want to know, buy or sell, and why? Plain and simple.
Hold your thought.
I want to know if the Patriots fans listening today, are you buying Patriots stock in the rest of the season, or are you selling? And why? All right? I think my answer might surprise you. And I'm going to give that to you, and I want you to contribute as well. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. We'll get to that and more coming up on the Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor from NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriots season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriots season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Wednesday, bi-week Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio. Pats, of course, have this week off, which is week 8 in the NFL. They're 5-2 at the break, so almost the dead even half point of the season. Mm-hmm. Patriots have 9 weeks left to play, and we've got the Miami Dolphins coming up 1 week from Sunday back here at home, which starts an unbelievably brutal stretch.
Yeah,
easily,
November's going to be the toughest part of the schedule.
And we kind of anticipated this, and now that it's staring us in the face, I think you realize that this is no question.
Yep.
The gauntlet for the Patriots. What they have coming up, they have Miami. They'll go to Indy, and they'll come back here and
host the Jets,
and then they go to New Orleans,
and then Miami after that,
and then Miami and again
those,
after that.
Those three road games are all at the moment night games, primetime games at 8:20 or 8:30.
Big stretch.
The flex schedule kicks in
right
later in November, so there's a chance that could get changed, but something tells me they won't because they'll still be big games, and the networks that have them will want to keep them there. So three primetime road games out of four, it's a tough stretch, John.
Big stretch.
And they're good teams that they're playing.
No question about it, and we'll obviously have plenty of time to jump into that, but let's regress just for a moment back to this past weekend because we haven't really had a chance to nitpick.
Mm-hmm.
And let me get what your initial thoughts were in terms of, again, like the week before, and when you whack Tennessee and whack anybody by a 59-0 score, mm-hmm. there's very little that you can nitpick on, but obviously we always find a way to do that.
Well, sitting in the press box for that Titans game, when they got up 10-0, 17-0, 24-0, and you could see Tennessee gave up, the Patriots played about as perfect a game as they could play against Tennessee. And you knew early that the game was over while they were blowing them out every time they scored. We didn't get that sense at Wembley. No. Even though they were scoring, Tampa Bay was hanging in there. And 21-7 at halftime, none of us really felt like the game was completely over at that point. The Patriots certainly didn't play their best game, even though a 35-7 score may look like they had a cakewalk. They didn't play their best game, and I'll point to one disturbing fact in particular. 10 penalties, 8 of which were on the offensive line.
Yeah, that's there you go. That's my number one huge nitpick was the left side of the offensive line. And I'm willing to excuse, to an extent, Sebastian Vollmer, just because he's a rookie. And but, I mean, you know, repeated mistakes,
right.
There's no way that that should happen. And then I'm not sure what Logan Mankins, where he was, but he was not at Wembley on
Sunday.
Well,
you know what? And he's good for about one or two of those kind of games a year.
And I think that's the reason why I'm nitpicking on Logan. The man's got a lot. He's a Pro Bowl caliber guard now.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to make mistakes like that.
Yeah, and he has one or two of those games a year, and it's almost like clockwork now. You can sort of expect that he'll have a meltdown game like that. But then he follows it up with you know, several stretches of great games where you never hear his name called.
Yeah, I'd like to see more consistency, I think.
Sure.
And I think that's the big thing. But the left side of the offensive line really just it just bothered me.
The one that keeps getting me is Dan Copen, the center, who now has 4 or 5 false start penalties.
Yeah, by the way,
year.
What is he doing?
He
on
has
the, false
the football.
Okay, he has the ball. Is he moving it?
I think he's being thrown off on the snap count, maybe because of the noise or Brady's cadence or whatever. And I think he's jerking the ball by accident. But if you're the center, you should never have a false start penalty.
No kidding. I mean, it's supposed to all run around you.
At the very least, if you're unsure, don't move. Better to snap it late than early if you're the center, right?
You would think.
Because at least if you snap it late and somebody else
moves,
flinches, the penalty's on them for the false start and not you.
So it's like, all right, Cope, you know, thanks for throwing me
when
under
doubt,
the bus.
Stay still.
No kidding. Oh,
but, I mean, easier said than done. Neither of us has ever played center, but
that's also true. Well, I just, you know, okay, again, this is nitpicking. This is what we're doing here. So, but the offensive line just never seemed in sync. What was the noise like? Could it have been a problem?
It was loud at times, and especially in the first half, it was consistently loud, but no louder than, say, the Lucas Oil Stadium.
Well, I was about to say, shouldn't they be prepared for that?
Yeah, they've certainly played in as loud or louder venues.
Okay, that was where I was going.
Mile High.
Yeah.
Is an outdoor stadium, and that's one of the loudest places I've ever heard.
It was
certainly not louder than that.
I heard at one point that they had to go to a silent count. Is that right?
Yeah.
Jeez,
I mean, it was pretty loud. It was pretty loud, John, but
well,
that's still, they played in those conditions.
But it's still,
before.
Yeah, it's still something they should not have had any problem with. They practice this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I was just...
The solace I take from it is that at least that happened in a game where they were the much better team and the outcome,
right.
You know, They're not going to get 10 penalties against the Colts or the Saints and win that game.
All right, what else are we nitpicking on, Eric?
I wasn't especially pleased with the running game again.
Yeah. Well, I knew we were going to get back to that.
Unfortunately.
Maroney was Maroney.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know what, I'm no longer surprised. I'm no longer amazed. I'm no longer even really disappointed. I have accepted it as fact that he's wildly inconsistent. He's always going to be a dancer.
Yep.
There's just nothing else to it.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Right.
Now let's move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Patriots apparently don't have, or at least not publicly, they don't have a problem with it.
Right.
Bill has come out and said, I don't have a problem with Lawrence. Okay, that's great. Then you live by the sword, you die by the sword. That's all I'm going
to
tell you.
And my last nitpick before I head out to practice is I am not seeing enough consistency in the pass rush department.
Mm.
Mike Wright had a good sack in that game the other day, but aside from that, I just don't think they're getting to the quarterback as consistently and as frequently as I'd like to see them.
Okay. All right. Now, the question I'm asking of everybody, and since we have an hour left in the program here, is the question of the day is whether or not taking stock of the Patriots at midseason. Are you buying or selling, and why? What are you doing?
Well, I was accurate in pointing out that they'd be 5-2 going into the bye. So I'm going to make another prediction and say that they're going to go 6-3 in their final 9 games to end the season at 11-5.
Does that win the division?
Wins the division, gets them a home playoff game at the very least, at least one home game, At this point, I'm not sold on the fact that they're going to win the Super Bowl. I hate to say it, but I don't feel confident enough in them yet to believe and to say that they're going to win the Super Bowl. I think they can. I just am not going to definitively say that they will. So
you buying stock or you selling stock?
I'm not going to sell stock just yet.
Okay.
I'll still buy because I still think there's a chance.
Okay.
I'm just not confident in my in my wager.
All right, so see, there you go. That's how we want you to answer today, kids. Webradio at Patriots.com. Buying or selling Patriots stock in the final 9 weeks of the season.
And I'm out to practice.
Yes, you're going off to practice.
So I'll see you tomorrow. I won't see you tomorrow.
You'll be here tomorrow, though, with Chris, right?
Yeah, Chris will be hosting. I'll come and visit for a little while.
Awesome.
And enjoy Tampa.
Way to go. Always. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. All right, so there's your question of the day. All right, buying stock or selling stock in the Patriots. They've got 9 weeks left to play. They're on top of the division now. There's no real telling as to what the rest of the division is going to do, whether or not the Jets will be viable, whether or not the Dolphins might be able to play their way back into this. And, of course, you still got two games with Miami still to play. That's the first one back after the bye week, as we all know now. So Miami can't be out of it. Jets certainly aren't out of it. They already hold a win over the Patriots, so they wouldn't mind being in some kind of a tie situation because right now they'd hold the tiebreaker. And let's not discount Buffalo. They probably should have won the game here in the season opener. So I don't think you should discount Buffalo, especially when you play a team twice in the same year. Knowing the gauntlet that the Patriots have to run during the month of November and the first week of December, as we've already stated, and we'll state again, Miami, at Indianapolis, New York, at New Orleans, at Miami. Those are your next five games. That's not for the squeamish. It's just not. It's going to be difficult. I think that the Patriots, out of those five, and I said this last week, and I'll say it again right here, I think the Patriots have to find a way to win three of those games. Somehow, some way, they've got to find a way to win three. So if you win the two at home, you've got to find a way to win one of those three on the road, at the very least. That's at the minimum, kids. That's at the minimum. That's going to be hard to do. 2-3 would be easy to see. 3-2, I'm not so sure. That could be a huge swing. This 5 weeks, to me, is going to make or break the division in 2009. If they go 2-3, it's wide open, and it's going to be up to those games in December, which, of course, certainly seems to favor the Patriots. I hate to say anything's a layup, even though in this year, you know, when you've already played Tennessee and played Tampa Bay, those would have to be considered layups. I don't know. End of the year, Carolina could be a layup. I'm not so sure Houston will be, because Houston could literally be scratching and clawing for one of the final playoff spots down to that last week of the season. So that game undoubtedly will mean something to the Texans. Probably should mean something to the Patriots as well. They might need to win that game just to clinch the division. I think this is going to go right down to the bitter end here, is what I think. We're going to take the time out here. I'm going to let some of you have a couple of moments to ship us your thoughts, whether or not you're buying or selling Patriots stock right now over the final 9 weeks of the season. I'm going to give you my answer as to whether I personally right now, as of today, and today being October the 28th of 2009, whether or not I'm buying or selling Patriots stock and the reason why. I want you to participate as well. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com will join us right here inside the playbook.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
I was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member PIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VCast subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Hour number two inside the playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook here with you on Patriots.com radio. And Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com is going to join us in about 25 minutes as we'll get his thoughts on the bye week and where the Patriots stand right now. We're going to ask him the question of the day. What kind of stock do you take in the Patriots right now? Are you buying or are you selling? Patriots practice is just now getting underway today. They are going to practice today and tomorrow. Here in Foxborough. Patriots have a late practice getting underway today. Actually, they're on the Gillette Stadium practice, actually on the Gillette Stadium field today, not in the adjacent practice fields today, but they're inside the stadium today working. So that's why Eric took off to get the media attendance portion of practice in for the first 15 minutes or so going on today. And then the Patriots will also practice tomorrow on the adjacent fields, and then they will take off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So everybody's going to get a four-day weekend and four-day bye week off. And not only the players, but apparently the coaches are allegedly going to get a day or two off as well, which is probably deserved. You need a little mental break, especially, you know, roughly the midway point of the season. And then they will resume practices and begin preparations in earnest for the Dolphins next Tuesday back here in Foxborough. So that's the upcoming schedule for the Patriots. Walk through practices today and tomorrow, most likely to be working on some things that you've probably even read on the blogs about, but trying to correct some mistakes from the Tampa game this past Sunday. And basically just, you know, working on trying to continue to improve. At 5-2, you have the division lead. You got a game lead over the Jets. The Dolphins are coming up twice. The Jets are also coming up. And then you've got, you know, two huge tests of which the Patriots season will be measured by. When they go on the road and take on two of the NFL's unbeaten remaining teams in Indianapolis and New Orleans over the course of the next month. Big test for the Pats, and we'll find out right away whether or not this team does still belong amongst the NFL hierarchy for this season. So are you buying or are you selling stock in the Patriots at this, you know, virtual midway point in the season? After 7 weeks of play, nine more weeks still to be had. We're at week 8 of the 17 weeks overall in the NFL season when you throw in that bye week, the extra week there. We talked all season long about how if the Patriots could get to 5-2 in the bye week that you'd have to be at least relatively pleased with that. Not perfectly pleased, but certainly relatively pleased. And you can certainly look at the two losses that the team has had and think, well, you know, with a healthy Tom Brady in one and certainly without, you know, some of the mistakes that they shot themselves in the foot with in the other, you know, you're within earshot and eyeshot of being, you know, at least 6-1, if not 7-0. It's not out of the question. So I ask you today, are you buying or selling stock in the Patriots? And by that, I think I generally mean, okay, do you feel like this team can win the Super Bowl? So that would be the ultimate buy. Now, you might say, well,
I'm going to buy because of the long haul, but then, you know, before they get to a point where they lose, I'm going to cut my losses, kind of like stockbrokers do. Okay, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. In other words, you could see the Patriots maybe, I don't know, winning a couple of games, getting to the Super Bowl and failing, or getting to the AFC Championship and falling short. I mean, who knows? You could still consider it a buy, and then you put a stop order in, right? And sell, and then basically, you know, before things go south, and then, you know, take what profits you have left and move on. I can understand that thought process, because that's pretty much, guys, where I am. As I thought about this question earlier today, my initial reaction was to say, well, you know, do I think this team can win a Super Bowl? Yeah, they can, just like Eric said a short while ago. Yeah, I think they can. But here's why I'm selling. I'm not buying stock in the Patriots for the long haul this year. I'm selling. Why? Because I'm a long-term investor. I have to be,
ridiculous.
Well, I have to be true to my you know, somewhat, you know, fiscal conservative background here. I like to call myself a social moderate and a fiscal conservative. And I'm selling because I don't see this team winning a Super Bowl as it presently is constituted. I don't see it. I think they're, like Eric, I absolutely concur with his opinion on 11-5. I think that's where this team is going to finish. Now, they have finished 6-2 or better in the last half of the season, the last eight games of the season, every year since 2002. I don't think they're going to do that this year. I think technically, you know, I think they win against Miami in the next game, and then I think from there on out, I think they go 5-3 over the remaining eight games. So I don't think technically they get there to that point this year. I just think the November schedule is going to be too difficult. Yes, the team is playing much better on offense. Yes, the defense might be, and certainly is proving to be, better than originally advertised. Okay, so that's all good. The trends are there. But I'm selling the stock because I don't ultimately see this team winning a Super Bowl. There's still some unanswered questions in the running game for me. There's still too many inconsistencies on offense. Forget the nitpicky penalties we just got through talking about. I'm still not sold on the fact that Tom Brady is going to be the old Tom Brady. We've seen him take steps toward getting back. We've seen it over the last 2 weeks. He definitely has gotten better. I don't know that he ever gets there all the way back. It may be well into next year before we see the old Tom. It's possible. Now, granted, as a Patriots fan, like many of you, I'm going to be rooting and I will be, you know, cheering and I will be hoping that I'm wrong. But I'm setting the fan part aside here, now trying to, you know, look at this somewhat analytically and put on my opinion hat here for the sake of media and for the sake of, you know, this program and for the sake of, you know, sharing discussion here, which is what we're supposed to do. I ultimately don't know how the health of the defense holds up. You can't really gauge on injuries, but injuries are a factor whether you want to admit it or not. They shouldn't be an excuse, but they can be a factor. I'm not sold on the depth, linebacker-wise or otherwise. Inconsistencies in the play of the defensive line. Eric even alluded to it a little while ago. Pass rush didn't really seem to be there when it certainly perhaps could have been and should have been against Tampa. You know, I could go back to the Richard Seymour thing, but that's kind of beating a dead horse, so I'm not going to do that right now. I'm not sold. Now, if you ask me, okay, so if you're not buying stock in the Patriots, who are you buying stock in? I don't know that I buy stock in anybody. Because frankly, even though I think, and this is sort of it's almost a contradiction in terms here, but even though we've seen this year sort of unfold as a have and a have not league, which to me is as surprising a turn of events as any in the NFL, because we have seen there are definitely, you know, four or five teams in each league that you could say are championship contenders, and everybody else seems to stink pretty much right now. And this league was supposed to be built on parity, and this is not a parity year. There are haves and have-nots this year, clear to see. And yet, I don't know of the haves who I can definitively say should be there.
You can break it down to about three or four teams in both leagues. Should be there, and that's it. Are the Patriots one of those? Okay, I will give you that. We don't have a dominant team. Not the kind of dominance we saw in 2007. No, 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 not even close. Steelers fans may say, well, you know what? We've been to two of the last four Super Bowls. We're the defending champs. Why not us? And I would answer that by saying, okay, why not you? I have questions about the Steelers running game. I have questions about the Steelers secondary. I think the Steelers are very much in the same similar situation as the Patriots are, to be quite honest with you. Indianapolis, like Charlie Casserly told us in the last hour, I'm not sure who they've really played that can measure up. Patriots may be one of their first real tests. New Orleans, right now, if I had to buy stock in anybody, I would say the Saints. And the reason would be is because they seem to have so much going for them. Number one, they've got great momentum. Number two, better than advertised defense. Number three, an explosive offense that right now is on pace to beat the Patriots scoring record of 2007. Can you believe that? If they were to continue to score at the almost 40 points a game that they're scoring right now, between 35 and 40, I think it is, they would beat the Patriots record by about 35 or 40 points. They would score over 600 points this season if they continue to average with them. Now, I don't know whether or not they'll do that over the last 10 games or not. Probably not. But they're on pace to beat the Patriots' offensive scoring record of 2007. So that, amongst everything else, is why I think, well, if I'm buying stock in anybody, I'd have to go New Orleans. Plus, I think they have a little bit of the emotional factor on their side. Here's a team that has never been to a Super Bowl. Never been. They've only been to one NFC championship game and lost that a couple of years ago. So I think that they would certainly have emotion, and they would have a large majority of the rooting public whose teams aren't involved probably on their side. I think there'd be a groundswell of support. Who wouldn't want to see New Orleans try to win, especially after Hurricane Katrina, in terms of trying to continue to, you know, rebuild New Orleans? I mean, come on. It's a great story. It would be a great story for the NFL, for the league, to have a team like that involved. It's a feel-good story. So I guess I would buy them. I don't know who I'd buy in the AFC. I'm not sold on Minnesota in the NFC. I'm not really sold on Dallas, although they surprised me this last week against Atlanta. I'm not sold on Green Bay. I'm not sold on Philly, San Francisco. None of them. None of them. New Orleans stands out. You know, Indy, in the AFC, still have questions on the defense. Still think that once they get, hit in the face, with a fist, which is going to happen pretty soon, how do they react? If they respond, Peyton Manning may be having the absolute year of his career right now. He may be. This may be the best year in Peyton Manning's career. And he has that team largely on his shoulders right now. So kudos to Manning. That might be enough. That might be enough to get the Colts there out of the AFC. Could Brady do the same thing this year? I don't think so. A year or two from now? Well, maybe. Let's face it. It took Manning basically a year plus to really round back into shape, or most of last year, when he had that ruptured bursa sac in his knee. And he wasn't really the Peyton Manning that we've, come to know and some of us loathe and hate over the last few years last year. But this year, he's on target. So, I mean, to me, long as, knock on for Micah here, nothing else happens with Tom Brady, that bodes well for the future for New England. But what about this year? Just too many overall questions for me to buy stock in the Patriots. 11-5, they squeeze into the division title. That's my thought. After this 9 weeks, they'll finish the last 9 weeks 6-3, although I think it'll be a struggle to get there. The Jets will probably end up somewhere in that 10-6, 9-7 variety. I don't know that any other team is capable of winning 11. I don't think the Dolphins are this year. I mean, the Dolphins are, 2-4 now? So, I think the Patriots will be the division champ. I think Charlie Casserly also correctly said that will probably be the case as well.
which means they get a home game here, and the Patriots haven't lost a home playoff game since 1978. So you're looking at survive. You know, you're winning wild card weekend, and you're surviving to the AFC. You're surviving to the divisional championships, the conference semifinals, and then you go on the road, and you probably face, you know, you're probably either a 3 or 4 seed. So you go on the road, and you're probably facing, well, right now you'd be facing either Denver or Indy. Now, if you could tell me the Patriots go on the road and play Denver for a second time this year, okay. You know what? I'm not feeling so bad about their chances. I don't think the Patriots go to Denver and lose again. I really don't. Indy would be a different story. Might be a different story. So maybe then the Patriots, you know, make the AFC Championship. It's conceivable. It's possible. Especially if they're peaking. Especially if they don't have any other injuries continue to plague them. And I'm not talking about just on offense. I'm talking about on the defensive side of the ball. All right, so there's my thoughts. And again, you know, it's all built on supposition. We're all just kind of surmising now because nobody really knows how to predict the future. But based on what we've seen through 7 weeks, I, in good conscience, in good fiscal conservatism confidence, I can't buy the stock for the long haul. It would be a short-term purchase, and then it would be a short sale, probably by, you know, week one of the playoffs. So there you go. Webradio@patriots.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you're buying or selling Patriots stock at this, again, virtual midpoint of the season, and what your nitpick of the week might be from the 35-7 win over Tampa in London on Sunday. I do have to admit, I was jealous of the guys. I would love to have gone. I've said this many times. I'll say it again. I mentioned the open hour of the show, and at the tail end of PFW today, really enjoyed going to London when I was there as a tourist a few years ago. Well, hopefully one day we'll get a chance to host a game like that, and then they'll bring the game day crew, and then we can do the whole full Monty, so to speak.
Would you do PA with an English accent?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that. I would not. I could probably do it, but then it would sound cheesy. So I wouldn't want to do a cheesy British accent. Just wouldn't.
That is another Patriots bloody first down.
That's a bloody fuss down, mate. Well, that's Australian. See, I can even mix a little Aussie in there. No, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, I think, you know, it would be great if you could have, you know, the Patriots cheerleaders, the Patriots game crew, you know, and basically it would be like, you know, taking Foxborough and taking Gillette Stadium and moving it to the east some 3,000 miles.
Only if the musket men get to come.
Well, yeah, we should. We should take everything with us.
Do you think you could check their guns?
That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Trying to get those through customs? Well, let me ask you this. Maybe they could borrow some of the ones from the Revolutionary War. Yeah,
maybe the Redcoats could help us out.
The Redcoats could help us out. Could you guys help us out? Can we borrow some of your weapons? Sorry about that thing in 1776, guys. Gosh. That would be great. Oh, goodness. All right, so there are your topics for the day, and hopefully get a chance to share some of them. Let me share a few of the emails from earlier in the program and from the tail end of PFW with you. TGNNJ says, John, you're right. Charlie was great. Very refreshing analysis, not the usual pandering. Can you get him on a permanent rotation like Mr. Baxter? I don't know. What do you think, Doc? Is that a possibility? Call him back before this year's over again?
Of course. We'll definitely try to get him back on. We'll see if he's willing to make multiple appearances in a season.
Find out if he's, you know, game a little bit. That'd be great. Good idea, TG. I don't disagree. I think he actually he is very refreshing. And I like the fact that he definitely speaks his mind. And he has no lip service to pay anybody in the NFL because he's not currently employed by any team in the NFL. So it's all good. It's all good. Dale sends this one from early. Says, did someone say they didn't like the food on the UK trip? When visiting Leicester, is it Leicester or Leicester in the UK? I think it's Leicester. Anyway, in the UK some years ago, we asked the hotel desk clerk where to go for a nice lunch, and he said, France. I also learned this one from a Japanese traveler on the same trip. World's happiest man. The world's happiest man lives in Britain, gets paid an American salary, eats food from a Chinese cook, and has a Japanese wife. Good. The world's unhappiest man lives in Japan, gets paid a Chinese salary, eats food from a British cook, and has a... Okay, you get the idea. Yeah, absolutely. He said, my wife's Japanese, so I can tell this one. That's Dale in Bedford. Thank you, Dale. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody said that they didn't like the food. I think they just probably said it was sort of, you know, nothing to shout home about. And really, I would have to agree. You don't go to Great Britain. You don't go to the UK. You don't go to London for the food. You might go for the pubs, although you don't get it ice cold in a lot of places like you do over here. But you don't necessarily drink ale ice cold either, and I happen to be a fan of that, so that's fine. But I actually found that, you know, British food to be more than palatable. Always been a big fan of, you know, things like shepherd's pie and bangers and mash and the full English breakfast like I've kind of, you know, gone on about here, and you know, crumpets and tea. And I love the idea of having a, you know, tea time in the afternoon. I think it's a wonderful tradition. And I didn't find it unpleasant at all. Nope, not unpleasant at all. So I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, hey, then again, you know, I eat Brussels sprouts and asparagus too. So, I mean, what can I tell you? Sometimes my taste is, you know, not everybody else's. This one comes from Carl in middle of England, Dudley, near Birmingham. Just got in for work, so I've not caught all the program. I hope you enjoyed the Wembley experience. My first live NFL game, so I enjoyed it, even though I thought the game was a tad one-sided. I felt sorry for Josh Johnson, but hey, you got to start somewhere. Always, what do you think? Anyways, what do you think of the Pats coming back to London, especially Pats versus Colts game? Well, my guess here, Carl, is that, first of all, next year they're going to find a team that's struggling.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Thank you, Joe. A team struggling with attendance this year. A team that's probably performing poorly on the field that would not mind giving up a home game. Thinking that, well, hey, you know, half of the receipts over in London and Wembley Stadium probably be at least as good, so it might be a wash. So you just take a look at the bottom of the standings, okay? And you can probably get some candidates there, but I believe already rumored to be candidates for a home team berth next year at London. You start with Kansas City. I believe they also said Tennessee might be one. And they're just 1 year removed from having the best record in the league, as we all know. And I think they also said, did they say Baltimore? Jacksonville was, I think, one too, although they're not at the bottom of the league. But I heard Jacksonville because they might be struggling attendance-wise. So there. Oh, and St. Louis. St. Louis was the other team that I've seen mentioned, the Rams. So those three or four teams right there would be prime candidates, I think, to be the quote-unquote home team. Well, I wonder if this comes as a surprise to any of you in the UK who are listening today. Now, depending on how the rotation and the schedule and the interdivisional play breaks down next year, and don't ask me what it is because I don't know. I'm sure some, you know, body who understands that and follows that stuff could probably send an email and figure it out here. But, you know, you could probably get a team. See, to me, a perfect opponent would be a guy like, be a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the reason I say that is because Dan Rooney's, you know, the Irish ambassador, yada, yada, and, you know, Big Ben with, you know, Big Ben. And I just think it's a perfect idea. I think the Steelers and somebody in London next year sounds like a great plan. Steelers will probably still be very, very good. I think that would be a big hit, you know, if you're looking at it from a purely UK perspective. Now, they've also talked about the possibility of doing more than one game, maybe even putting a second game over there. If they do that, well, who knows? I don't think you'll see, though, any of the four teams who have been there over the last 2 years, I don't think you'll see anybody else come back until at least either A, everybody else has been over there, or B, everybody else has been given an opportunity to go over there. See, because you probably have some teams say thanks but no thanks, and so then they go to the next team in the list and they say thanks but no thanks. So if it ever got back around, then you might see the Patriots come back. But until that happens, I'm not sure that that will happen anytime in the near future, to be quite honest with you. Now, if they do expand to 18 regular season games, or let's say my proposal was to go to 17 regular season games and make that odd game for everybody a neutral site game where you could actually play two or three of these neutral site games, say, conceivably in London, so then you don't have to worry about who the home team would be. It'd just be a neutral site game. Then you could see the Patriots, I think, come back in a situation like that if they are able to do that with the schedule. Of course, that'll all be a part of the collective bargaining, which they're obviously got to start work on here pretty soon. Otherwise, we have an uncapped year next year, and then we have a potential lockout in 2011, and nobody wants that at all. Nobody. Because none of us are working, which means none of us get paid. So that sucks. There's no doubt about that. But we won't talk about that now because hopefully, you know, smart minds, reasonable minds will prevail here, both on both sides of the fence. So hopefully, Carl, that answers your question just a little bit. Craig from North Carolina. I don't think we got to this one earlier, so let me make sure that we get this one in as well, and then we're going to get to some of the newer ones. He says, I don't think we've seen the best of Brady or the D. Tom is still not as sharp as he is capable of being, which is as sharp as Peyton is playing right now. I watched the highlights of the Colts from this weekend, and that guy is on fire. It would be awesome to see our offense execute the fade, comeback, and seven routes as precisely as they are. I think we have a shot at getting there as long as our other wide receivers and tight ends continue to have success in addition to Moss and Welker. Ask Brady who is the peanut butter and who is the jelly. Okay. Our D continues to improve. During spring training, Eric wrote several articles about leadership and James Sanders. It seemed that based on his development and improving relationship with Bill that he was primed to assume that role in the secondary. Merriweather seems to be the playmaker in the secondary. He is hitting hard, forcing fumbles, and now getting picks. So who is the leader in the secondary at this point of the season? Unquestionably, Craig, it is Brandon Merriweather, who, by the way, was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week for his performance last week. You probably know that, but Patriots did make it official earlier today by releasing that information. First time that Merriweather has made the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. First New England player to win the Defensive Player of the Week award since Asante Samuel won it following week 12 of the 2007 season. Merriweather, two picks within the first 6 minutes of the game. And obviously the first one was a pick six, 39 yards for touchdown to end Tampa's first drive of the ball game. So that's why Merriweather got the AFC Defensive Player of the Week award for this past week. Let's see what else we have here. Okay, now, some of our other questions here. TG and NJ decided to break it down for us. He says, all right, here's what we got, John. Break it down. Sunday 11-8 versus Dolphins, possible L. Sunday 11-15 at the Colts, loss. Sunday 11-22 versus Jets, possible loss. Monday 11-30 against the Saints, at the Saints, loss. Sunday, December 6th at the Dolphins, possible loss. Woo! That's bleak. Sunday, December 13th versus Panthers, win. Sunday, December 20th at Bills, win. Sunday, December 27th versus Jaguars, win. Sunday, January 3rd at Texans, win. But it depends if the starters are playing due to making the playoffs. So TG says that's four wins and five losses, making it a 9-7 season. That sounds wrong. Seems the division games are the key. No doubt. You basically just kind of made my point for me in terms of buying and selling stock in the Patriots right now, TG. Too many variables there where I'm not sure that I like the Patriots enough to buy stock in their success for the long haul this season. You just kind of laid it out right there in black and white, pal. All right. Jim in Florida. John, great show. My nitpick is the Pats continuing to use Welker on punt returns. His value as a slot receiver and Brady's go-to guy, his early season knee injury, inactive for two games, reminds us not only of his value as a receiver, but that he could be injured again, so let's not risk him on punt returns. I think that's a fair nitpick, Jim. That's a fair nitpick. I would tell you the reason he's back there is because I'm not sure they have any faith in anybody else to accomplish what he accomplishes. Number one, that. Number two, Julian Edelman is who they've also had back there. And Julian Edelman is currently, you know, got a broken arm. And even though he hasn't been put on IR, we don't know when. Ultimately, we don't know if he's coming back. The other option that they've had back there is Kevin Faulk. And usually, in those situations, what you see is Kevin Faulk as the short receiver, not the deep receiver in many different punt sets and punt formations. So the only other option really is Faulk. And I think they say Faulk, you know, for turns in the backfield because they're thin in the offensive backfield as well. You know, with both Fred Taylor and Sammy Morris currently on the shelf with injuries. So who else? Who else do you turn to? Comes back to Welker. He's a durable kind of guy. And believe me, I get you. I totally get you. But who else do you turn to? Also, he says, I am encouraged by the team's margin of victory in the past two games, but overall I am selling the Pats at this point of the season. I am impressed that the younger, faster defense of 09 is an improvement over the 08D. But this team will have to play much better in all three phases of the game in the upcoming stretch of games, and the offensive line needs to cut down on the penalties against Indy, Miami, Saints, and the Jets if this team is to make it to and win the Super Bowl. Go Pats, Jim in Florida. All right, Jim. Good analysis. I have no arguments with your analysis at all. It's pretty much right on. And you're right. I have to say that I'm selling the Patriots at this stage of the season. But, again, this is just a snapshot now of through 7 weeks here on October the 28th of 2009. You know, what are we seeing here on November the 28th? Boy, can you think about how much this could change? How this season could really change over the next 4 weeks? We could either be talking about the draft in April, or we could be talking about, you know, winning another Super Bowl. That's what these next 4 weeks are going to bring to the table for the New England Patriots. This is the make-or-break time of year, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Man. Now, if you're one of those that likes trends, one of those that are trying to, you know, figure out, you know, good things as well as bad things, hey, the Patriots have forced a turnover now in 15 straight games, so they've kept that up. You know, they're getting other people involved on offense. Sam Aiken scored his first career touchdown on the longest play of the season, no doubt.
Wow!
Even that 54-yarder on that little screen play, a bubble screen, I think it was, from Tom Brady. So, I mean, you know, guys that haven't been involved, getting involved, getting more used to Brady, and Brady looking a little bit more like the Brady of old. So if you're looking at trend, the Patriots are definitely trending up, but are you buying stock for the long haul? And that is the primary question of the day today, and there is still time for you to answer it. Webradio@patriots.com, that's our email address. You can also call at 508-543-7482. I'm going to get in a timeout. We'll get to some more of your emails. And Mike Reese, ESPNBoston.com, joins us next in the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Back inside the Patriots playbook for Wednesday. Web radio at Patriots.com. 508-543-7482. And we're waiting for Mike Reese to shake his duties and join us here in just a couple of moments. So stand by for that, and we'll get to Mike in a little bit. Anyway, let's get back to some of the emails that some of you have been kind enough to share with us today. Let's see. All right. Dale sends his email from Bedford, and he says, not buying or selling. I'm holding. I'm not buying anyone else's stock, that is for sure. I would not count on any other team winning it all at this point. Who's better? Well, the Saints. Do you have any confidence in the Saints? Really? Denver? Well, we had our chance to knock them off, but the Colts probably will later in the season. The luck is bound to run out. I think they'll be very good, but I don't think they'll win. The Colts? Well, we have that game coming up soon, don't we? In Indy. I think the Pats need that game. I don't really think the Colts have established any Denver-esque dominance over the Pats in recent years. And I think the Pats might win that game. Dale, I could see that. I certainly see where you're coming from. Charlie Cashley mentioned it in the opening hour of the program today. You know, the Colts don't appear to be world beaters, although, you know, certainly you'd have to say that, you know, Manning has been most impressive. Guy like Dallas Clark has proved to be more than just a tight end as well. He's turned out to be a pretty doggone good receiver all the way around. And a real binky for Peyton Manning in the absence of Marvin Harrison. So, you know, I think the Colts receivers are certainly more than adequate. Running game is at least adequate. But I think you can hurt the Colts on defense as well. So I think that's where, you know, we could have one of those 35-31 type of games, which I don't think would really stun anybody. Now, would it? Could they win it? Sure. You know, the Patriots are faster on defense. We've seen that. They're younger. They're faster. So could they give them some different looks? Yeah, it's possible. I like the fact that and one of the things that Mike had in one of his blogs earlier this week that I did read was how the players on the field for the Patriots defensively and their sets largely were designed in their mixed packages, in their nickel packages and their sub packages, I guess is probably a better phrase for it here, how they had some of the younger linebackers involved, and a guy like Adalis Thomas, who, you know, we've been ranking on for a few weeks now and obviously was a healthy scratch a couple of weeks ago, was only on the field for like 16 out of 65 plays. Well, it's because they wanted the younger, faster, quicker, you know, do-it-all kind of guy linebackers like Tully Bantakane on the field more often because they wanted to confuse a guy like Josh Johnson as much as they possibly could. And it's an excellent point, and it was a keen observation. And I think that that might be the same type of situation that you could foresee the Patriots doing for Peyton Manning. Give him multiple looks and give him an opportunity to think before throwing, and that's when a guy, you know, like Manning can, I think, get into trouble. That doesn't mean that you're not going to get whacked every once in a while, but you could certainly see that potentially happening. It's not an unbelievable scenario. Mike Reese, who's for so many years has covered the Patriots, not only for the Metro West Daily News and going back to PFW and some of the beginnings there, and then on to the Boston Globe and Boston.com, and now toiling for ESPNBoston.com, joined us here in the playbook. It's great to visit with you, Mike. I know you're a busy guy, so thanks for the time today.
John, you make it sound like you flatter me. What can I say? And we might have to deal with some fun crowd noise here. I'm home with my daughter. She's sick from daycare today. So if you're hearing
something
in the background or some of those beautiful sounds that we usually play at bedtime.
How old is your daughter? How old is she?
7 months.
Oh.
I,
I
just, I just wanted to explain the crowd noise.
Well, listen, crowd noise is always welcome here, number one, so you don't ever have to apologize for that. And having been there, done that, where you are many years ago, I might add, I certainly feel for you, pal, and I will also say better you than me. Because I have been there. So don't you worry about it. And by the way, that's great. I'm happy that, you know, things seem to be moving along well for you. How is the new job, by the way? Are you enjoying it?
Very much so. It's been different. You know, there's parts that I love, such as really getting into the detailed analysis of things and statistical breakdowns and all that stuff. I think I have more time to do that stuff. You know, maybe one of the parts I miss about the old job at the Globe, I think when you were writing at the Globe, you always felt like, you know, you were at maybe the paper of record.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, there's a little bit of a feeling of missing that a little bit. But I think overall this has been really a great change and something that's energized me in a lot of ways.
Well, as a current cast member in some other different venues as well at ESPN, let me tell you, beware the mouse, because he will get a hold of you and not let you go, if you know what I mean.
You're talking about Mickey Mouse?
I'm talking about Mickey Mouse.
Corp?
Mickey Mouse and well, yeah, that's our friendly term for, you know, Disney. Yes,
yes.
And
yes,
you just be careful with Mickey, because Mickey is a stern taskmaster. People don't know that about Mickey. They really don't. They would be shocked to hear that Mickey cracks a whip.
Yes. So the point being that they work you hard. Is that what you're?
Yeah, they work you hard, absolutely. And sometimes you know when you want to go and do things that you know you're used to doing, they don't necessarily agree to it. So, like I said, they will milk you for all it's worth. So I'm glad that it turned out to be a great opportunity for you, because I think the fact that, you know, I always wondered when ESPN was going to launch quote unquote local sites, and I think it's a step in the right direction. I'd love to see them you know, break into some more, and I'm sure there are other, you know, sports fans around the country that are ready for you know, more localism such as it is. I'm sure ESPN New York is soon to follow, correct?
That's right. Yeah, they're going to come on with a few more. And I think you see, you know, I think there's a lot of quality on there. At the same time, you know, we're working out some of the, just like anything else, you're working out some of the early kinks and finding out what works and what doesn't. But, you know, the early returns on this have been really, they've been really happy in terms of the views and the you know, the content and whatnot. So I think, you know, it's all full steam ahead.
Well, I think you realize that a lot of it certainly is tire kicking at this stage of the game, and your challenge, you know, as a journalist, which is why they hired someone like you, is to continually supply things that you can't get elsewhere. And I think we all know this is where sports coverage is going, away from the print and more so to this particular venue.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, like the combination of the print, the video, a little bit of everything. And also, too, I think people a lot of times, like a football game, for example, you know, they see it at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, so it's the idea of enhancing what they see. The days of telling them what happened are probably less and less important. Maybe trying to explain to them why it happened is sort of where we're all headed.
That's absolutely right. So now you're getting into, you know, the whole muddy picture of journalists becoming analysts. And, you know, or having opinions, you know, and so we're walking that fine line of reporting and giving you what I think, not telling you what I see. And, you know, as a journalism instructor myself, which I know you know, that's always a huge conundrum for my students.
Sure, absolutely. And like, one example from the past couple weeks was I was going over something that we posted, and I usually like to put little tags on it if it's analysis, you know, hey, this is analysis. If it's opinion, this is opinion, because you really want to draw those lines really clear for people.
Absolutely.
Because of exactly what you say, and I think you see those lines getting blurred from time to time, and I sort of have to catch myself, John, you know, and saying, hey, let people know this is my opinion here. You know, this isn't sort of the nuts and bolts, you know, straight up stuff.
Right.
You know, I think it's important.
Absolutely. Well, actually, you know, I'll put you on the hook right now. I'd like to send you a note and get you to come speak to my class next spring.
where are you teaching?
I teach at Emerson.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
So.
You know, I'd love to do it, John. Honestly, I'm not just saying it because we're on the show right now, but that's actually something down the road. You know, we get the 7-month-old daughter, and
yeah.
You know, hopefully family grows over time. But that's something I'd actually really like to do down the road.
Good.
Because I find, you know, one, I find it keeps you sort of young and keeps you sort of on, look at how much media has changed for me.
Absolutely.
And I'm a young guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a young guy since I came out of college in the mid to late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different world than
yep.
what I studied just a decade and a half ago.
That's exactly
so,
right.
I think that plus, you know, when I see the young, hungry journalists, it reminds me, you know, what a great business we're in.
No
you know,
question.
I think, I don't, you know, so I like that stuff.
Yeah,
maybe
no question.
Down the road, I'd like to do that.
Good.
Also, maybe you can help. Maybe you can hook me up with a job in like 20 years. You
know? Actually, I was going to say the same thing about you.
you
can hook up an older war horse like me some point in time, you know.
We can work together.
Yeah, see, I think that's a great idea. That's an outstanding idea. All right, so you can get off to the business of taking care of more important things like your daughter here. Let me ask you a couple of things about the Pats very quickly. What do you think, where are the Patriots about where you thought they would be? And I get realize that's sort of a big generic question, but, you know, I think, you know, we all thought that coming into the season, knowing, and some of us knew, that it was going to be a bit of a struggle at times because Tom Brady still, you know, had to work himself back into some kind of playing shape. At 5-2, are you surprised where they are?
I guess I'd sum it up this way, John. I'm not surprised where they are. I'm surprised how they got there.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And when I say that, you know, if you told me 5-2, I probably would have went along with it. I think, you know, I thought that Jets game was going to be tough. I remember picking the Jets in week 2, so, I can't say that surprised me. I didn't think they'd lose to Denver, but I wouldn't have been surprised if they had lost to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I think about it, 5-2 seems right. But what surprised me was I wasn't expecting the early struggles of the offense, the early struggles of Brady. I don't think the Patriots were either, because I don't think they would have game planned the way they did against the Jets in week 2, going to that hurry up, no huddle, 3-receiver offense for the majority of the game if they didn't feel the same way.
Sure.
So I think that surprised me. And on the flip side, and this is something I'll write about a little bit later today on the website ESPN Boston, is the defense. I mean, you got to remember now, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, in training camp we were wondering if this was going to be the Achilles heel of the team. I mean, we said, look, they don't have to be great. They just have to be good enough to complement an explosive offense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the offense outside of these last 2 weeks against some poor teams hasn't been explosive, but I think the defense has been better than what I thought and what I think a lot of people thought it would be.
I think that's a widely held perception, and I think there'll be a lot of people that would agree with you. And I think the main thing that I'm surprised about is the fact that this team, I mean, obviously one of the major criticisms after last year, Mike, was that this team had to get younger, if not faster, and hopefully both after last year. And boy, did they ever make wholesale changes to try to accomplish that. And lo and behold, look, it seems to be working.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man, you just hit literally on the point of my article, specifically on defense. I think it is something that deserves acknowledgement, that the idea that they've been in such transition but have remained in contention.
Mm-hmm.
And you need only look at a couple of teams that they've played this year, the last 2 weeks, for a reason why it's impressive. The Tennessee Titans, 13-3 last year. Now, they're the same team. Look what's happened to them this year. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a game away from the playoffs last year. Look what's happened to them. It's hard, John, to keep it going in this league, and the Patriots have managed to keep it going while also turning over
yeah.
parts of their roster,
yeah.
specifically on defense. A couple guys I just mentioned, Brandon McGowan at safety. What a find. I don't think anyone saw this coming. I know I didn't. And Tully Bantakane, the same thing. These are mid-career guys. These aren't younger guys. But you put those guys in there with some of the younger guys, like the Mayos, the
right.
Guyton, the Chungs, the Butlers, the Myron Pryor, for another guy. I mean, it's been a nice turnover here. Merriweather coming on in the third year. So
mm-hmm,
I think you see it's a different look.
No question. And I think this is where you have to give not only Bill Belichick credit, but guys like Nick Caserio, and to a lesser extent, obviously, Floyd Rees, because I know he handles all of the contractual stuff. But, you know, the fact is that the system is in place. Scott Pioli may have left, but apparently the system's still working in terms of evaluating players, because they've still come up with some gems. And you brought up a great example in Brandon McGowan. After what you saw of him, little that we did with Chicago, who'd have thought he would come in and perform like he did?
Right. And then, you know, I'll balance it out too, John. And I think you're right on. I do give him credit. And on the flip side, let's also acknowledge that, like everyone else, they make mistakes. No one is saying they're geniuses. No one's saying they're perfect. Joey Galloway, Greg Lewis, Alex Smith, Kevin O'Connell. And I think what happens is sometimes when the mistakes pile up, you know, it's easy to come to a snap judgment of, oh, the Patriots aren't what they once were because of personnel decisions. But I say you have to look around the rest of the league, and every team has misses like that. There's no one that's hitting it out of the park every time. So you look at the averages. For every Joey Galloway, there's a Brandon McGowan. For every Greg Lewis trade or Alex Smith trade, there's a Tully Bantakane signing. You know, for every missed draft pick like a Kevin O'Connell, there's a fine like a Myron Pryor. And as long as you're balancing them off and hitting maybe a few more times than you're missing, you're actually doing better than most in this league. And I think just having that overall context is so important, and it's why the Patriots, in my opinion, have had the sustained success that they've had. And of course, it helps when you have Tom Brady, because that can erase some of those other mistakes too.
Sure it can. And as he shakes off more and more of the rust after sitting out last year, that's only going to get better. A couple of other quick ones for you, Mike. Number one, the question that I asked the fans today here on the program was, you know, take stock of the Patriots now at the veritable halfway point of the season. Are you buying or are you selling Patriots stock for the remainder of the year? Which are you doing?
Yeah, I'm buying it. At the same time, I think it's probably good to say that the next five games will truly tell us, you know, what this team's all about. That's a tough stretch coming up. Miami at home, at Indy, Jets at home, at New Orleans, at Miami. I think at that point we'll know what they are. But the reason I'm buying, if I have to buy or sell, is that I see a team that's getting better. And I look at other teams around the league like the Jets. When they were 3-0, I was buying stock. Then they go out and lose three in a row, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, I'm not sure. I see the Patriots getting better. Part of it's the teams they've played, but I think that, you know, they've built some confidence up, and they've given themselves a chance here to be in the mix. So I'm buying.
Okay, fair enough. Now, also had a question from an emailer, Adrian in Cleveland, who says that you had ranked the Patriots rookies thusly in terms of, I guess, their impact on the team. Butler, Edelman, Vollmer, Pryor, Chung, Ingram, Hoyer, Brace, and then I think you may even mentioned Rich Ornberger as well. In terms of their production or potential, how did you come about that ranking?
Yeah, production.
Yeah.
Totally production.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't put Brace that far back. And it was one of those tough questions, John, that to be honest, I don't really like to answer, just because I feel like sometimes you have to give those things time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, at this point in 2003, Ty Warren probably would have been at the back of the list
of
the rookies that year. But look what he's done. So these guys develop at different times. And so I think the question was, you know, rate the rookies in terms of their contributions. Or maybe that wasn't the question, but that's how I took it.
Right.
And so that's what I did based on sort of what I've seen to this point. And it was hard to do. And like I said, I don't like to do it just because these guys develop at different rates, and we're only, you know, seven games in, or when I answered it, six games in. But you know what? It was sort of a fun thing to play along with, so I went along with it.
The PFW guys told me I should ask you about your trip to Wembley on Sunday. What happened? What happened?
Okay.
Because I didn't – that was one of the – by the way, I follow your blog all the time, and I must have missed that one. So what happened?
Yeah. Well, thanks for following it, John. Here's what happened. I get in a cab because I wanted to get to the stadium early so I could snap a couple pictures of the tailgating scene.
Yeah.
And I'm in a cab with two photographers, Jimmy Davis of the Globe, and I think it's Stefan Savoia is how you pronounce it, from Associated Press.
Mm-hmm.
And we're flying, you know, we're going through the Barrow, some streets here in London, and I'm in the jump seat. So picture the cabs in London.
Oh, your, God.
You know? So
yeah.
I'm in the jump seat on the passenger side, which is actually the left side of the car.
Right.
And we're coming through, and another cab ran a yield, and and really plunked us pretty good on the back left-hand corner of the cab. And, you know, I took a picture of it and a picture of the cabbie, and I blogged it saying, you know, we almost had an unexpected opening for a Patriots reporter. and John, I took some flack because, to be honest, the damage on the cab wasn't that – it didn't look that bad. But my point was, 1 second earlier, and I was done because I was in the jump seat, and the cab that hit us was going pretty fast would have hit exactly where I was sitting. So I probably didn't do myself justice. I think people were telling me to man up, you know. but I tell you, it was an experience. I was like, wow, only in London. Imagine if I ended up in the hospital.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
That's what happened.
Oh,
didn't even give us a discount on the fare either.
Oh, that stinks. Come on. He still was holding his hand out for full fare. Other than, you know, nearly getting, you know, whacked like that, how was your experience in London?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, John. Come back just sort of feeling bigger as a person and professionally. I mean, some of the people out there were so kind. The way they talked about, you know, even the Patriots, you know, Patriots.com guys, you could tell they follow it. And the blogging just felt like a connection to go to a place I had never been and be a little uncomfortable at first and sort of learn about your surroundings. And then to feel, you know, how nice the people were and how appreciative they were of the work you do. It was just so flattering on so many levels. I just thought it was a great trip, great to see the culture, and I look forward to doing it again at some point.
That's great. Mike, I appreciate your taking the time of babysitting with your daughter today to visit with us. Great to visit with you. We will certainly be following the blog on ESPNBoston.com and all of your reporting. And, yes, I will hit you up in the springtime for a little class session. How's that sound?
Definitely. Get me into Emerson, you know?
Absolutely.
We'll do it.
Count it. Appreciate it, Mike. See you soon.
Great talking. Okay.
You bet. Bye. Bye-bye. Mike Reese, again, ESPNBoston.com is where you can catch all of his stuff. One of the good guys in the business. There's no question about that. And obviously, as many of you undoubtedly are aware, he's a very, very good reporter, very thorough in his coverage of the team. So you want to make sure that you keep taking stock in what he has to say. Let's wrap up the program with a final few emails here. Alejandro from Bogota, Colombia says, John, hope you're doing good. Just for the record, I like black pudding. I don't have a problem with anybody not liking it, especially if you see it being made. It's kind of gross. Don't go into details. And you like black pudding and you're in Bogota? Really? Yikes. He says, for Sunday's game, I cooked fried fish and chips with a beer-based batter. It was a nice experiment. Okay, I'm buying that. My nitpick has to do with all those stats that start with over the last two games. Because over the last two games, the Patriots are the 85 Bears. Suddenly, we're ranked third in scoring and scoring differential. But this season, the Patriots have not scored a point in the second half against teams with a winning record on the road. Do we have what it takes to win playoffs games on the road? Because it sure seems the road to Miami will go through Indy and or Denver. I would say, at least right now, Alejandro, that it's a little early to really get an accurate picture of that. I mean, obviously, somehow, some way, if you're able to get to the playoffs, yeah, I think that you probably have to win on the road in order to get to the ultimate destination, which would be the Super Bowl. But as I said earlier in the program, no, I don't think right now they do have what it takes to win on the road. That doesn't mean that they won't get there. But this next month is going to tell an incredible amount about this team. And if they can get through it, not only with, you know, three wins over the next five games, and relatively healthy without anybody getting put on IR, then the stock is going to soar. Keith says, I agree with half of what you said, but you're forgetting one thing. This is the NFL, and any team can beat any team on any given Sunday, and that's why this game is the greatest in the world. New Orleans goes to the playoffs, but they lose to the Vikings, who are an NFC East team. You have to realize that the Dolphins laid the blueprint for how to beat the Saints. All you have to do is run the ball primarily and have a decent passing game, which is what the Vikings, Cowboys, and Eagles can do. The Dolphins lost last week against the Saints because they were one-dimensional, which is why they will not beat the Patriots this year at home or in New England. Well, I still need to see the Patriots stop the Wildcat. And when you have both Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams running the Wildcat, and, oh, yeah, by the way, they do have a guy named Pat White who really hasn't gotten into it yet, and you know that's coming for New England. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's coming. First, I got to see him stop it. But he says here, all you have to do is play man coverage on the receivers, drop 7 to 8 in the box, plug the run. Notice how all teams that play the Dolphins adjust to the Wildcat in the second half. Well, I would say they should adjust in the first half if they know what's coming. Why aren't they adjusting in the first half? And again, Pat White is the huge X factor here. Once you see him get a little bit more comfortable in that, you know, formation and able and available to throw the football, look out. All right, one more here from Keith, who says, John, I was at Wembley on Sunday and thoroughly enjoyed the experience, but the Pats play left me feeling very nervous for the rest of the season. As you've already nitpicked, Tom's two interceptions, the horrific number of penalties, and Fred Astaire Maroney going nowhere fast until garbage time leaves me concerned about the team's chances against Indy and the Saints, and I suspect we'll split the games with Miami. I'd like to think we could win one of the two games at Indy and New Orleans, but I wouldn't be surprised to lose both. Like you, I think the Pats will win the AFC East, but unless things change a lot for the better, I don't think they'll progress very far into the postseason. By the way, I read somewhere in the last few days that the NFL UK has to subsidize the home team to compensate them for the loss of concession fees, parking, and so on. Could it make a bad team more money than a true home game, I wonder? Absolutely it could, and I think that's why you're seeing the prime candidates for the home team next year in London that I've already seen listed: Jacksonville, St. Louis, Kansas City. Now, Jacksonville's record isn't horrible. They're 4-4, and as Charlie Casserly told us earlier in the program, he's surprised at that. However, they're not doing well at the home gate. So those teams, I think, are prime candidates for that. So, and he also mentions, in terms of a possible European franchise, I can't see it working in the near future and even the medium term. The NFL has not yet established the limits of support over here. That's a good point. He says, in my opinion, it needs to play at least two games a year in four European cities for 5 years to make sure there is even the making of a stable fan base. All right. Keith, very well thought out. Great email there. Christina is here. Christina Acra, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you doing, Jim?
Awesome. Tell us about Shop Talk today.
Shop Talk today. Well, you know, the guys really have all the information. I just kind of sit here and learning the entire
Well,
time,
I know Jeff
and
Jim are here from you know, Patriots Pro Shop. So.
Yes, they
all
are
right.
here.
Do you want to you guys want to like fill us in on the details today? Or?
Yeah, it's the bye week, and it's time for everybody to sit back, relax a little bit, and have a beverage in your favorite drinkware.
It's a good theme for today,
I
think.
It.
We have a lot of drinkware.
Yeah. Any of the drink to go with the drinkware?
Where's the bottle, boys?
Come visit us over in the warehouse and we can talk about it.
Gotcha. All right. All
right. We're not there yet to the weekend, right?
Yeah. There you go. Absolutely. All right. So that's coming up in Shop Talk. Good to see you again. Thanks, everybody, for participating. Thanks to Charlie Casserly and Mike Reese on the program. Tomorrow, Inside That Playbook, Chris Price from WEEI.com will be here since I'll be on college football duties. Peter King from SI.com and Russell Baxter from ESPN will be on the program tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel.